We got hour number two on this Monday. It's Bickley and Murata. Vic broadcasting live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's our pleasure to welcome back to the show, first time in a while. He's the host of the Ryan Russillo Podcast and the Ringer Podcast Network. Ryan Russillo joins us right now here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Ryan, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Remember sports? Weren't those cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I kind of felt like yesterday I hit a different point where I was watching a bunch of the old NBA playoff games, and then I was like scrolling ahead to go, okay, which ones do I want to tape? And I was like, okay, we don't need to tape seven of these like you have seen it before. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, like everybody else, just trying to find a way to kind of fill that void. So,
all right, you know. So you look at what the NBA is doing. Now, the idea of playing and competing in a bubble, the Las Vegas model, I don't know where that's at, but it seems like the idea of having guys play horse against each other remotely is appealing, probably something you could do quick, get it in, fill some of the void. Your thoughts on what might be in front of the NBA right now?
I'm up for anything. I really am. And I'm not talking like selfishly like we want stuff on TV. I really don't think now is the time, although there's a kind of radio 101, we're really good at it, is somebody comes up with an idea and then all of us go, well, here are all your problems with the idea. I don't want to do that. I don't want to hear it from anybody else right now because this is unprecedented. I remember, you know, less than a month ago talking to the league going, what do you think? And they're like, you know, it's like asking somebody the end of a movie that they've never seen before. Like you can make some guesses, but you don't know. I mean, you don't know. So for anybody that says, okay, well, week one's still fine and the Masters is going to be here, like, okay, great. Like, you know, none of this stuff means anything until we actually know kind of what the playing field's going to be at that point. So anyone or any of these leagues that feel, you know, first medically it's safe enough to do this, I'm not going to have a problem with them trying to figure out a way to salvage the TV revenues, because that's really what it's all about. It's not just the owners keeping their product lucrative. It's the players not losing big chunks of their salary because the NFL and the NBA are partnerships, the way the money split up. And then your TV partners that would love to put something on so that they can make up to their advertisers that have bought all this stuff. So then you start filtering it down how connected it is. It's salespeople out there, they're going to lose jobs, different people on production sites. I mean, there's all sorts of things. So any kind of content these leagues can get on that is cleared to be safe enough, I'm all for. And I'm not going to start from a point of trying to criticize anything that they're doing here. And they're going to try some stuff that doesn't work, but they're just trying to find any way to keep some kind of revenue stream open because so many people are dependent on it. So I'm all for it.
I think that's a healthy way to look at it. And we're talking to Ryan Russillo here on Bickley and Murata. And I brought this point up earlier, and we're kind of in the same boat. I mean, you're a podcast host. We're doing a daily radio show about sports where there's not really any sports going on. But what this has done in a lot of ways is press the individuals, press the entities to be more creative. Now, that being said, since you're not going to dismiss anything, is there an idea that you've had that you'd like to see the NBA or another league maybe do in terms of creating content that we haven't seen yet?
The only thing that I think is really, it is something I talked about before this, and I know an NBA owner, after Simmons and I did it on the podcast, it's something I thought about for a while, but I would start trying to find a way, if I'm baseball or basketball, of filling that void that you guys understand this as daily talk show hosts, that void where it's kind of after NBA free agency to the start of football season. Mm-hmm. So 6 or 7 weeks. And that's why we've seen the basketball tournament, the 3-on-3. Like, that's why there's a hockey 3-on-3 that's coming, that's supposed to be coming in a little while, where everybody's kind of decided, wait a minute, there is this massive void. And traditionally, you know, broadcast partners would tell you that the number of people at home watching TV during those 6 weeks, it's just lower because kids are off and people are on vacation, all those different things. And you go, okay, but eventually as population increases and people are still watching TV when they're on vacation, maybe it's worth having some sort of product on. So if I were the NBA, the first thing I would do is go, you know, we'd never probably would be able to get away with testing if we could have the NBA finals at the end of August. And I still don't even know if that's realistic. But that's the kind of stuff I would be thinking about, where let's use this tragedy, let's use this time to experiment in a way where we will probably never be able to experiment like this before.
Yeah.
And if things are heading in the right direction, you know, let's try to get some of this stuff on here in late August and see what the numbers are.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of trying that, no doubt about it. There was an interesting conversation at the end of last week. I think Rick Bucher started it about LeBron James and maybe how this might be affecting his chance at a title. The fact of the matter is some people think LeBron might have written off 1 year already to go to the Lakers, to get ensconced in a new city, to bring over Anthony Davis. What would it mean to him and some of the aging players in the NBA? Who is the clock really ticking for the most, in your opinion?
If you think about the LeBron part of this, you know, look, I like Rick. He's a great guest. We had him on all the time. He doesn't like LeBron, okay? He doesn't like LeBron. He's been a Kobe guy for a long time. He came on my radio show and called LeBron more of a glue guy than a superstar, and I, like, lost my mind. So to hear him say that, like, he thought LeBron secretly was thrilled so that this way he would get kind of a pass and get credit for what he did with the Lakers making the one seed. Nobody's going to care about the Lakers being a one seed if the season never comes back. 5 years from now, we're not going to be sitting around arguing about LeBron going, you know, it was great that 1 year where he's the one seed, 60 games into the season. Right. Okay, it just doesn't work that way. So LeBron, even though it seems impossible to see this guy age because, you know, he's arguably right there with Giannis, maybe slightly behind him for the MVP thing, eventually he will get old, okay? And Tom Brady extended this further than I thought, and there are plenty of arguments where you could dig into some of the stuff and go, you know, Brady, even without the weapons, actually did get old. I mean, it's going to happen. So for LeBron to lose a year with Anthony Davis when they have a legit chance, I still kind of felt like they were oddly underrated a little bit as a playoff contender when everything shut down, going, you know, should we all be sitting here like thinking, hey, the Lakers are probably the safest bet to pull this thing off, even though we don't love their depth? For him to lose a legit chance at another ring, that's devastating to him. I mean, it really is, because he's not chasing anybody other than, you know, not that he's going to surpass Jordan, but he's chasing this ghost. And for him to lose a chance at 35 years old and say, oh, you know, whatever, he'll have a couple more years, eventually he's not going to look like he does now. I mean, it does happen, even though it seems impossible with him. So I think he's got more to lose than anybody.
You mentioned it. The MVP race was tightening when the league suspended the operation. You know, when it ended, were you of the thought, Ryan, that LeBron James was the MVP? How narrow is that gap between Giannis and LeBron? Or was it too early to tell still?
He was making a push, and what happens is, and I know how the voting works, and there's still, you know, a good chunk of people voting that I think you can be a little bit more impressionable than you think. You know, sometimes I think as opinion people, I'll be like, wait a minute, am I changing my mind because other people are saying this thing, and I feel like I'm this loner out here? And it's still been Giannis's award. I would vote for Giannis tomorrow if that's what we were told to do. But I thought LeBron was making a push, and he was making a push in the way that the awareness was out there. Like that stuff was starting to happen, where there's a nice run, and they'd beaten all these good teams. They beat the Clippers again, beat Milwaukee. And so you could start seeing the sympathy vote. Not that LeBron needs sympathy, but like you guys understand in Phoenix, when Nash gets there and it's this new thing. I mean, hell, it happened with Barkley too. Like Barkley gets there, it's this new thing. It takes him to another height. Voters buy into that. And then people want to go back and look at the stats and go, well, that was the wrong pick. And you're like, yeah, but you're taking yourself out of the moment in that year. And LeBron felt like he was building towards this moment to close the season where more voters were saying, you know what, I think I might vote for him. And that stuff can really kind of get carried away. And, you know, next thing you know, Derrick Rose, this story of this young kid from Chicago leading the Bulls to this great record, ends up getting an MVP where he probably should have lost one to LeBron. But the story of the voting is very, very much a factor, and that was kind of becoming LeBron's story.
All right, so are you excited for the release of Last Dance, and do you think it will help young generation basketball fans realize the greatness of Michael Jordan?
Yeah, there's definitely, I don't know if it's LeBron strategically, like I feel like Bill Belichick's been doing this more the last couple of years where he was allowing way more access because he's such a historian of the game, and it's also like, wait a minute, if I give people more access, maybe they'll understand how much better I am at this than maybe people realize. And, you know, the weird thing, well, there's a lot of weird parts about it, the unfortunate passing of Kobe, but how many players playing today were like, well, that was my guy, you know? And I remember, like, when I was young, I went to one of those Bulls-Celtics playoff games in the series where he scored 63. I didn't go to that game. But, you know, you kind of forget how long he was around. You also kind of forget that, you know, him not having any playoff success the first 7 years. Like, if you think LeBron got a hard time, imagine Jordan playing today. And the debate shows, like, we would have done stuff. We would have gone, yeah, good score, but can't really win.
Skip Bayless would have killed him. Bayless would have destroyed him.
I'm not familiar with his work. Who? I think the MJ thing, like, I've been going back and watching some of these games from the Bulls-Pistons series, like him losing to them and then getting past them. And Now, I'm not – the weird thing is, like, Jordan fans are really protective and sensitive about an argument they've already won. You know what I mean? Like, so – like, I see some of these Jordan tweets. I go, you know, no one's really saying that anybody else is better than this guy. I mean, yes, there's a LeBron fan, and I used to do this weird thing where I used to kind of argue, like, would five Magic Johnsons be the best version of any player you could have, you know, in a five-on-five setting if you could clone people. But
right.
It's going to definitely be a reminder. What's that?
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. You could clone one guy five times. Who gives you the best team?
I just gave you a Tuesday show.
That's
there
a
you go.
Thank you, dude. Thank you, bro. Appreciate
where,
that.
Where do
man.
We send the check, Ryan?
We appreciate
oh,
that.
Oh, go for it. I was big on the Magic thing because of what he did when Kareem turned his ankle against the Sixers. And I go, I don't know that there's that many guys that could, you know, jump center, be a point guard, and then just dominate you at 6'9". Because I always thought, like, Magic could do more. You know, Magic in a different setting would have had better numbers, could have done more things, but he just, you know, look, the Magic thing worked out. I think it's 9 finals in 12 years of playing. Like, I don't think we do enough on that. But, yeah, I mean, the easiest answer to this question that I've taken forever to answer is just yes, of course. More people are going to realize. But there's one little small thing I'd add. When you go back and watch these games, and I know that we've seen the video clips of guys getting tackled and murdered at the rim and all this different stuff. Yes, you were allowed to foul harder and be more physical. And so that gets turned into that the defense was incredible. And I really think that gets overstated. The 80s, the defense in some of the playoff games is laughable. The 90s, it's so collapsed because there's so little shooting that, yes, the paint is more clogged, but they're just guarding less of an area. So I did a podcast with J.J. Redick the other day, and we were talking about this. And look, this is J.J. Redick. You know, who am I, right? I never played a game that we cared about. But J.J. Redick's like, I went back and watched some of the games. We were talking about it. He goes, some of the concepts are so stupid and outdated. Like, it's really, really funny to keep hearing. So I think what's happened is that you're going to see these hard fouls in these physical games, but it didn't happen all 48 minutes where everybody was just tackling each other, and today's player would not want to retire after 5 minutes because he got fouled hard. Today's player would be taking shots where guys would go, what the hell is he doing shooting from out there? I have to guard all of that space.
Yeah.
So it is something to pick up, and it doesn't mean that Jordan's not great. He's still the best, but it's just something when you go back and watch those games, you're like, why would four people all have a foot in the paint here when there's three people wide open? It's like, well, because no one could shoot.
No one could shoot. True.
Ryan Russillo, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Shifting topics to football, we were just having the discussion that it feels like it's that time pre-draft where people, maybe some analysts, are starting to overthink some things. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but to me, Joe Burrow to Cincinnati at number one is a foregone conclusion. But you're starting to hear that that chorus grow a little bit. Maybe they should go with Tua Tagovailoa. We've had one analyst suggest that Justin Herbert at number one. What is your thought on all of that, Ryan?
Well, my boy Cowherd and I did this. I went on his radio show because, you know, I felt like one of the funny things that's happened here and how we debate things is that if you decide you like Tua, then you also have to dump all over Burrow. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, how did that happen? And I like Tua better. I've seen them both live. I mean, I was at the LSU-Bama game this year. You know, if you want to argue against both of them, you could say in that game, this is actually an incredible number. Like, I had Daniel Jeremiah on, and he said he thought maybe 25 NFL teams would trade their entire receiving core for either Alabama or LSU's from this last season.
Yeah.
That's how talented. There was like 11 guys out there that are going to play on Sunday that were catching balls. But Tua, with the health thing, it makes me – like, I still like Tua better. So I don't think taking Tua number one if he checks out medically is that ridiculous. But for anyone to knock Burrow, I mean, the completion percentage this year, he sets a record for it, and it wasn't like he was thrown behind the line of scrimmage and out in these bubble screens all day. I mean, he was chucking the ball down the field. Okay. And I really think there is this kind of unquantifiable thing that maybe ex-players understand better than most of us. But just I have to tell you, like, being on the sideline for five LSU games this year and seeing the command that Burrow has, and yes, I know he doesn't necessarily have the arm strength, but arm strength has become probably one of the most problematic things where you can talk yourself into a guy where Herbert has better arm strength, but I just think Burrow is one of those dudes that has a bit more of the it factor that all the physical stuff doesn't necessarily have to be there And he could still be a bust because 50% of these first rounders in the last 20 years end up being total flameouts no matter where they're picked.
Yeah, so. You're right about that. And the thing is, too, and I got to cover one of their games this past season, and the fact that Alabama could have Tua Tagovailoa and maybe the best collection of wide receivers in college football history and still not beat LSU tells you how good that LSU team was. All right, I got one last thing I want to throw at you. Did you think it was funny how Devin Booker didn't want to play as the Suns in NBA 2K?
I love his honesty. I mean, you know what? I love it. I wish more guys did stuff like that because it's just, you know, you feel like so many guys end up doing stuff like, oh, I can't do that. And Booker's like, I don't care. I'm just doing it. You know, maybe he just doesn't feel like he has to face the locker room the rest of the year with everything that's going on.
That's right. That's right.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, brother. We really appreciate
the time and the insight on everything.
Yeah, hang in there, guys. Thanks.
All right, you too. Thank you, Ryan Russillo. He hosts the Ryan Russillo podcast, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti.